44. On Parnassos, 9 years ago. The Black TIE fighter landed, settling into the soft, gray sand. It had been almost a year since Phasma had last seen her home planet, and Parnassos hadn't changed much. It looked just as inhospitable and wretched as she remembered. She didn't immediately see the thing she came for. But then again, she didn't expect it to just be sitting there on the surface. Luckily, she had brought machines to find it. A quick scan revealed the hidden shape, and she was soon scraping sand away with her hands. For all her careful planning, she hadn't given enough thought to this part, hadn't brought a shovel or even a droid to do the dirty work. Even though she knew how things worked on Parnassos, how the elements conspired to whip away everything that was important or good, she had forgotten that a year in the desert would leave anything buried in sand. There must have been dozens of bodies here, the bones a few meters or even less under her white boots. But that wasn't why she had come. The dead were not her concern. Soon her gloves scraped against something hard, and she began to find the shape of her prize. When the first glint of sun sparked off the metal, she had to look away. A year under the sand had done nothing to dull that spectacular brightness she had first touched a year ago, after dragging Brendel Hux across the endless desert, fighting for every step. It took hours to uncover the hidden prize, and she had to be very careful of the beetles, which popped up from the sand every now and then, hungry for any kind of movement that could indicate liquid. She squashed each one she saw, knowing all too well their power. One of them, however, caught her eye for no particular reason that came to mind. She recalled watching the sickness take over Carr, watching him fade into himself until he was practically transparent, far beyond help. As the beetle crawled over her glove, its legs and proboscis hunting for the tiniest crack to invade, and its golden carapace glinting like fire in the sun, she smiled under her helmet. Unclipping an ammo box from her belt, she opened and emptied it, dumping the energy cell into the sand. The beetle went in, and she clicked the top closed, jiggling it to be sure it was sound. The little beast might be useful someday. Returning to the real work at hand, she continued to dig out Brendel's ship, the one he called the Emperor's Naboo Yacht. A silly name for a broken toy. She couldn't help remembering the first time she had seen it, a falling star burning through the sky and plummeting into unknown lands, farther away than anyone she'd ever known had traveled. Phasma had left a trail of bodies behind her getting here, and she would leave a trail of bodies behind on the way back if that was what it took to erase every sign of the girl who had been born here on a forgotten, broken planet called Parnassos. Tearing the ship apart took hours. Even with her various tools, it was an exhausting job, all done under the blistering sun in her full armor, and she had to take several breaks to sit in her tie, drinking water, watching out for beetles, wiping the sweat off her forehead. Funny how, even on Parnassos, she didn't feel comfortable without her helmet. After she had joined the Skyr, she'd embraced their fierce masks and salve paint as her new visage, as a better way to face the world and terrify it, perhaps giving her a slight edge in any battle. Her helmet performed the same service. She'd first put on the fallen stormtrooper's armor in the middle of this very desert, and had never looked back. No one in the First Order knew what her true face looked like except Brendel. She would remedy that soon. But first she had to complete her task. It had the feeling of a ritual, what she was doing here. It felt right. Transforming valuable remains into protection was, after all, a very Parnassian talent. Not that it was easy, but then again, what in her life had been? As she dragged the chrome plates back to her ship one by one and loaded them in, she recalled using plates of metal as sleds and then as shields. To think that all those years she had lived in the Nautilus and then in the Skyr, she had had no idea what existed outside of their small territory. It had felt like a revelation that an entire group could sleep on one patch of dirt, as Baldur's Clawfolk did. And after she found the records and studied the colonization of Parnassus, she knew that, as Brendel had told her, there were indeed rich lands just out of reach that whole time. A few hours on a ship and life would have been entirely different, bereft of violence. She was going to visit one of those places of plenty now, in fact. She only took as much of the yacht's chrome plating as she needed, leaving the rest to the desert, where it would soon be buried. Back in her tie, she lifted off and zoomed into the blue sky and over the ocean. It had seemed so deep and dark when she was a child, this immense and yawning promise of cold death and monsters. From up here, it looked friendly and blue and balmy. A short while later, she landed the ship on a broad swath of green land, once planted with crops to feed the millions of Konstar Mining Corporation workers, it was now a riot of wildly flowering grains. A short walk away was the exact thing she needed, the thing that Konstar had been kind enough to build nearly 200 years ago. A factory. Not just any factory, but one dedicated to making mining equipment from local metals and ores. Cleo Station. In the year she'd been with the First Order, Phasma had spent as much time as possible learning. She was accustomed to sleeping 4 hours or less in a day cycle, so while the rest of the stormtroopers and officers were asleep, she'd been catching up on tech, tactics, galactic history, and even a little slicing. She punched the right code into the data pad, and the abandoned factory's doors slid open as if they'd been greased only yesterday. Konstar hadn't known how to terraform a planet, but they'd known what they were doing when it came to constructing and programming their facilities to last. Inside, the building was flawless. It was as if the miners had simply walked out, and everything had kept going without them. Which was almost what had happened. After Phasma found a small cart and rolled the heavy metal plates down the smooth hallway, she passed wide, shining windows looking down on the factory floors and into boardrooms. In one room, she found hundreds of deactivated droids, standing still and covered in dust. In another, she found several dozen people curled up on the ground, as if they'd simply lain down to sleep and stayed there. Beside each of them was a cup, still rimmed in poison. Funny how people who had never had to fight to stay alive were so willing and eager to give up their lives when faced with a few challenges. Phasma had grown up eating sea urchins raw and drinking water from snail shells, while these folk had looked around at bounteous fields of grain and been unable to handle being abandoned by their overlords. Phasma was happier with the First Order than she had been with the Skyre, but she would never be willing to drink poison for any master. "Fools," she muttered, dragging the cart farther down the hall. She had chosen this particular factory, out of dozens of Konstar factories, because it had specific machinery capable of replicating a very particular kind of process. Having downloaded the facility's map into her datapad, she knew exactly which room housed the equipment she needed. She didn't even have to flip the generator. Everything hummed along perfectly when she powered up the synthicator. Plate by plate, she fed the chrome sheets into the smelting chamber until they were all gone. Then, piece by piece, she removed her stormtrooper armor, placed it in the scanning chamber, waited until it had been properly coated, and replaced it with the next piece. They had built this costly machine so they wouldn't have to constantly ship in new parts whenever something broke. They could merely replicate an exact replacement. Phasma was happy to consider it one small piece of Konstar's payback for having made her early life a living hell. The synthicator screeched back and forth as each new piece of armor took shape in glorious chrome. She had to carefully file the sharp edges and drill holes and place bolts here and there, but the printer's work was flawless beyond her wildest imagining. The helmet was the last piece and also the most time-consuming. She had selected a prototype helmet design that Brendel had rejected, but she had fought for. And she had to first remove all the intricate electronics within without damaging them, then reattach them inside the new helmet. It was a tricky business when working with Plastoid, and even more challenging when dealing with the slickness of the chrome. She sighed heavily and pulled out her datapad, studying the downloaded schematics to help her get all the fittings just right. to think. Just a year ago, she had never held a working datapad, and now she could build one from scratch, given the right materials. Powering down the synthicator, Phasma left her old white armor on the ground. Piece by piece, she put on the chrome armor for the first time, lovingly fitting every shining plate. Her captain's cloak sat perfectly on her shoulder, swirling around the metal with a satisfying swish that it didn't have over the old white plastoid. Along with the chrome plating from the ship, she'd also hauled in a new chrome sidearm and matching chrome blaster rifle, both ordered secretly and already tuned to her gloves. The blaster slid into its holster with a decisive click, and Phasma smiled. Standing before a plate glass window, Phasma was, for once, satisfied. Just as she had constructed this shining suit, the first of its kind in the First Order, and even more distinctive and commanding than that sycophantic fool Cardinal's red suit, she had also constructed a completely new Phasma. She spoke the updated basic of the First Order fluently, her accent just as clipped and polished as Brendel Hux's. She fought better than any other stormtrooper, including Cardinal. And she took her orders directly from the General and no other. A position she'd reached in less than a year. In part by getting rid of anyone who stood in her way, of course. But that was something she'd learned on this very planet. Kill or be killed. So she killed. And still, she rose. Phasma rubbed a dull spot on the chrome helmet until it shone and carried it under her arm. Down the long hall, past the tomb of dead fools, and out the door she strode, her boots the only sound in the entire world. Her ship waited in a peaceful field, the kind of place her parents and then the Skyr folk had told her stories about as a child, a dream lost generations ago of simply walking on solid ground without a starving belly. Placing the chrome helmet on her head, she took in a deep breath through the filtration system, tasting the air of Parnassus for the last time, and finding it sweeter than ever before. She boarded her ship, took off, and blasted into the sky and back toward the Finalizer and her new life. She swore never to return to this planet again, or to the girl who had once lived here. There was only one more person alive who had seen her face, and she was on her way to end him. She had become Captain Phasma of the First Order, and nothing could stop her. This is January Lavoy. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars: Phasma by Delilah S. Dawson. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Aaron Blank. Star Wars: Phasma is a production of Lucasfilm Limited and registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 2017. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production Copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Penguin Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.